Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL for Sports on Earth, The Comeback, and the Scout.com Orange and Brown Report. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
Well, hello, Andrea.
We are, as of this taping, just under 24 hours away from the kickoff to the 2016 NFL season, a Super Bowl 50 rematch, the Denver Broncos and Carolina Panthers. Can you contain your excitement?
It's tough to contain my excitement for the season returning, and it's also tough to contain my excitement slash intrigue for this game, as we'll discuss much more later.
Because this is the return of Minute Picks this week.
Right, exactly. but this is just one of a number of games this week that are fascinating to me for so many different reasons. Like I said, we'll talk about that some more later.
We also have three more divisions to quickly preview, as we've been trying to do throughout the summer. Instead of going team by team, though, we're going to go division by division, try not to take up too much of everybody's precious time.
Due to time constraints, we've continued forward in this broadcast.
Yes. but first up, a few news and notes from around the league. Most notably, what the Minnesota Vikings decided to do to ameliorate the crisis situation they found themselves in last week when starting quarterback Teddy Bridgewater suffered a devastating left knee injury, including a torn ACL and other damage. Saturday morning, bright and early, they decided to make a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles for Sam Bradford, giving them first and fourth round picks in return. Sam Bradford and Sean Hill have been splitting first team reps this week, and head coach Mike Zimmer said he will announce the starter right prior to kickoff of the week one contest against the Tennessee Titans. Hasn't made a decision yet. You know, right now I'm looking at the explanation that Rick Spielman, Vikings general manager, the rationale he sort of made in terms of trading for Bradford or trying to make any decision. And basically, you know, he said, quote, he was trying to find the best solution out of the worst case scenario. So what they did was they got on the whiteboard and, quote, sorted out the scenarios, guys on the street we might want, guys who might get cut, guys on teams that might have enough depth they consider dealing a quarterback, and concluded that, to be honest, there was no solution, no good solution. So basically the Vikings found the best of the no good solutions that they came up with on their whiteboard a week before the season started, and that's why you have Sam Bradford in Minnesota for a first and fourth round draft pick.
Well, I mean, as we discussed last week, especially for longtime listeners of this podcast, we praise Sean Hill because we like Sean Hill. Sean Hill is a fantastic backup quarterback.
Yeah.
He's a guy that can come in a pinch and make a couple throws and keep your offense somewhat functional. And but you know,
you don't want to hang your season's hopes
for
on
all
Sean
the
Hill.
For all
that's
the positives.
Why he's not a starter.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, is we love him because he's a good backup, and those are hard to find. It's hard to find guys that know their role and are comfortable within that role. You put him in there, they're going to do everything they can to help you win. But, you know, he's still not a starter. He lacks that dynamism that a lot of the starting quarterbacks have. He doesn't quite have the downfield arm strength.
Right.
He doesn't quite have
the accuracy.
Right. But he's a smart guy, and he can operate in a pinch. But this is the beginning of the season, and they know they're not going to have Teddy all season. So this isn't a pinch, and they needed something else if they – because they're stacked. I mean, this is a defense that's been slowly improving since Zimmer took control.
And they could easily be one of the best in the league this year.
I fully
three.
Expect them to be.
For sure.
And regardless of whatever's going on the offensive side of the ball, I fully expect this defense to be nobody you want to mess with.
Right.
And so you know, with that and with a Hall of Fame running back, I think what they did, while it definitely seems like overpaying, and I think the Eagles definitely – made out on this trade. I mean, they got a lot for a guy that was one of three potential guys they could have start at quarterback.
Right, and it was the guy that they were planning on starting for 2016. But then beyond that, it wasn't you know necessarily that he was going to be in those.
No,
those plans.
I think they were probably hoping that they would have Wentz start by the end of 2016, and Brad, they wouldn't even need Bradford going into 2017. So they just now are forced to, you know, put their rookie to the fire at this point and just let him learn and see what happens. And, but they're, you know, they're building up for the future, especially for some getting some back for what they gave up to get Carson Wentz in the first place.
Right.
So definitely a smart play for the Eagles here. Howie Roseman did a great job to like just hang out and wait and get what he was looking for, and so it turned out really well for them. Although I don't necessarily think this is a bad deal for the Vikings, because I heard this on the radio the other day. I think it was a former GM somewhere. I don't remember who it was. But they made a very interesting point, and that's with this kind of injury to Teddy, it's hard to say that it's hard to feel 100% comfortable that he's your starting quarterback in 2017.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's part of the reason why they pursued Sam Bradford, is because the extent of Teddy Bridgewater's
right.
injury is such that who knows what his readiness is going to be come week one of the 2017 season. And Sam Bradford, even though it, you know, the way the contract is structured was very beneficial for the Eagles in the sense that they could, you know, move on from him after 2016 and not take a big cap hit. At this point, now the Vikings have a guy they can potentially fall back on in 2017 for not a whole lot of money, until Teddy Bridgewater is ready to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But this all, of course, assumes the health of Sam Bradford, which is
sure.
always going to come up when you discuss him until he proves otherwise.
Or he retires. So and yeah, that risk is definitely out there, that they could have spent future draft picks to have Sam Bradford sit next to Teddy on the injured reserve list. You know what I mean?
Right.
So obviously that's
the
out
risk
there.
The risk is there.
The risk is there for sure. But at the same time, I'm not quite as bullish. I think it was Boomer last night on Inside the NFL who predicted they would go at least to the playoffs, if not the Super Bowl. He was, I don't know. He's into this.
He's into this.
And
he's really into Sam Bradford. And yeah, he was right. You know, Sam Bradford can make all the throws. Sam Bradford was a number one overall pick for a reason. All of that is true. But at the same time, the health issue is just such a huge albatross.
No. I'm saying that aside. Obviously, that risk is there, and if that happens, it happens. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, the thing I think that why I'm into this, maybe not quite as much as Boomer. Why I'm in this is I think that this could be the best situation Sam Bradford's ever walked into. He's
sure.
got a very strong defense on the other side. He's got a Hall of Fame running back in his backfield, and he's got at least Stephon Diggs has looked good. Kyle Rudolph's a solid tight end. He's got some weapons, some guys to throw to there.
Sure.
And being in Norv's system, it's going to be completely different than being in a West Coast system like he's been in. Norv is a throw the ball down the field, and you know that I think might set up better for what Bradford does. And
throw Bradford in a more Air Coryell kind of
scheme.
Yeah,
exactly. And that could play to his strengths a little better. And I'm just saying I don't think it's completely out of the question that we could see a different Sam Bradford in Minnesota, one that's better than what we've seen so far. Assuming he stays healthy, which that's a caveat you could say about any player right now. You know what I mean?
Assuming he starts, I mean, I would assume that Sam Bradford is there, especially when you're trading a first round pick for him. That he's eventually going to be the starter. The question is he ready for week one, just because he's been thrown into a new system, you know, seven days in advance.
We obviously won't know until right before game time,
right.
But I'm fully expecting Sean Hill to start Sunday. I think Bradford probably could. I mean, it's 9 days after he, or 8 days after he signed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So just to come in and learning all the with everything that's new, especially because it's not necessarily a translatable system to what he's run in the league so far. I think that's an awful lot, because that's the thing, is you're going to put Sean Hill in, he's going to be limited in his capabilities as a quarterback as far as what he can do in your playbook, but he's going to know it.
Right.
Sam Bradford's going to be able to do some things that Sean Hill can't, but he's not going to know most of the playbook. So
right.
It's going to limit your offense. Especially by the second half, your offense would be probably pretty easy to figure out for the Titans at that point.
Right.
But, you know, we'll talk about that game some more later. But still, I think as far as week one goes, frankly, it's just 1 week. As far as the season's concerned, it doesn't really matter that much. It matters 1/16, I guess. But I think that obviously this is a situation that could be good for Bradford once he eventually starts, whether that's Sunday or the week after.
In additional quarterback news, the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees came to an agreement on a contract extension this week. Essentially, the actual terms are for 5 years, but it's actually a two-year deal because the contract voids in 2017. He's going to be making $44.25 million in fully guaranteed money over the 2016 and 2017 seasons, and then that's likely the end of his career in New Orleans unless they can convince him to stay. They're going to be eating some salary cap dollars in those voidable years in the form of signing bonus, but that seems like something that they're comfortable with, especially if they can't find another solution at quarterback and Brees is willing to stick around for another year or two and they can kind of rework that deal. But for all intents and purposes, it looks like 2017 is probably going to be Brees' last season with New Orleans.
But see, I was kind of thinking that's going to be his last season.
It might be his last season, period.
I mean,
that's for sure.
He's getting up there, and, you know, it's been – you just start wondering when these guys – you know, it's especially somebody that's productive and
who can routinely throw for 5,000 yards per season,
yeah.
But it doesn't matter because your defense stinks.
Well, because that's the other thing is, like, even though he's still – he's, you know, at least as far as we know, he hasn't had any crazy injuries or anything, and he's still very productive at the position. But like, yeah, like you said, you know, they weren't competing for anything last year. And it if you're whatever, how old is he? 36, 37, something like that at this point.
He's a little older.
So like, you know, you're that old, you know what this game does to people. You've seen it happen to your friends and whatnot and over the years, and you're just going to keep rolling out there every year for, you know, I mean, obviously for good money, but still to, you know, put yourself at risk.
Put yourself at risk for a team that, whose playoff window closed a while ago,
exactly.
just because of this defense. I mean, maybe the defense turns around this year and can even be half as good as the offense, then that gives them a fighting chance, I think. But, you know, until I see this defense get better, because after they fired Rob Ryan last year, that didn't really improve things either. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, making good money and you know, trying to do good things in New Orleans or whatever, but at the same time, it's not getting you anywhere. It's not getting you closer to another Lombardi trophy. Then,
and I'm not saying for sure that he's going to retire, because obviously I don't know, but you know, potentially there's a swan song in there somewhere if he's still feeling he's got it, and the, you know, the door is closed in New Orleans, then, you know, and someone needs a veteran guy to come in, you know, like this Teddy Bridgewater situation. If that happens in a couple of years, someone goes down and Drew Brees is just sitting there, he might get a call and maybe we'll see him, you know. But
you never know.
You never know.
You never know. You have to see what kind of itch he has for football, I suppose, at this point in his career.
The Saints are an interesting one to watch this year. I don't expect leaps and bounds, but I don't think it'll take too much of an improvement on that defense, because that offense was so good last year, and I think they're going to probably be even better this year.
Yeah.
That I don't think it would take too much of an improvement on defense to make them decent to good.
All right, let's change directions here and get into these final three divisional previews. Again, we're going to kind of keep it a little bit more succinct than we have over the course of the summer, and just go division by division and not really go in-depth on the team. So we apologize for fans of the NFC East, AFC West, and NFC West who may feel like they're getting a little bit stiff here.
We're not trying to slight you.
But we're not trying to slight you. We're just trying to manage our time and manage your time.
Right. Things got away. If we could have squeezed in another podcast somewhere, we would have been able to. But, you know, things happen, and here we are the night before the season, so we got to finish this.
Yeah, we got to finish this. All right, first up, the NFC East. You know, the clear major storyline here is the Tony Romo injury, the fractures in his back that could keep him out half the season, if not longer, and the fact that rookie Dak Prescott is now taking over the offense. You know, we all saw it during the preseason. If you didn't see it, you probably heard someone talking about it. Prescott had a really good summer. He threw 5 touchdowns. He threw no interceptions. He was sacked only twice behind that wonderful starting Dallas offensive line. He ended up throwing something like 50 passes. But again, that's against vanilla defenses that weren't out there scheming to mess up a rookie quarterback when what he sees when he looks at the field. So I think it's going to be a little bit different for Dak starting this Sunday, and we'll kind of see what his learning curve really is, and if it really is as shallow as it seemed during the preseason.
Well, yeah, the you know, I don't think anybody should expect him to just go out and own it like he did in the preseason. You know, obviously it's going to be different playing 60 minutes against the starting defense for whatever team. But no, I mean, the stuff that we saw from him that looked good was he was quick and crisp and sharp in his decision making, and you know, getting the ball out and making nice throws, and you know, he didn't look like a rookie. So all this talk about he's a rookie starting, well, and I'm not saying that he's not a rookie, and he's gonna make I will guarantee he'll make rookie mistakes this year, but just the fact that he can operate that quickly and he's that sharp with this stuff this early,
yeah,
I think it bodes very well for them.
With the New York Giants, everybody's really excited that, you know, Victor Cruz is back out there, one of Eli Manning's favorite weapons, who's been out injured for almost 2 years now, and having him paired up with Odell Beckham Jr., and everybody's kind of seeing a resurgence of that New York Giants offense. I'm a little bit more skeptical of it than a lot of people, just because that offensive line is still, you know, it's still shaky, it's still a work in progress. And it doesn't matter how many weapons are out there for Eli Manning if he doesn't have time to throw, if he can't get the ball out, if his O-line can't protect him, then what does it matter if you can throw it deep to Victor Cruz or Odell Beckham if, you know, it takes you 2.5 seconds to get there and you're getting hit at 2.1?
Yeah, I mean, Giants, are, as always, have a bunch of talent, and I have a bunch of questions. So their defense still, you know, doesn't really overwhelm me. I know they made a bunch of moves, but we'll have to see if that works. The guys they signed and some of the draft picks they brought in. I'll just give my normal Giants preview of saying mixed bag. I'm not sure what we're going to get.
That's something like you could really say about the NFC
we,
East
we,
all the
we
time.
We dog
too.
On the NFC East too much.
We're so terrible.
I feel bad.
I do feel bad
sometimes.
About it. Philadelphia Eagles, you know, now with Sam Bradford in Minnesota, it's Carson Wentz. He's going to start. He's missed almost all of the preseason. He had a rib injury he suffered in the first preseason game. So he doesn't have that same kind of experience that a lot of rookie quarterbacks have before they end up starting in the regular season. But, you know, the other problem, too, for Carson Wentz is not just his rookie status, but also the lack of receiver talent. Everybody just all summer long, the hands on these Eagles wide receivers are just so unreliable. And so I feel like that's I think that might unfairly make Wentz look worse or more rookie-like than he really is, because you're, especially when you're a rookie, when you're a first-year quarterback, you need some established guys out there that you can trust to throw to, and they're going to catch it and make plays, and that helps build up the confidence of the rookie and of the entire offense.
Well, you just need to build up trust with somebody.
You need to build up trust with somebody, but it's looked like that's been difficult to do with the Eagles this summer. So I'm curious how that issue with receivers is going to affect Wentz's overall production this year.
I don't have a lot of expectation for the Eagles. I think that
they're trying to clear. They cleared house.
Well, that's
Chip
the thing.
Kelly
is there's
era.
Wholesale changes since Chip left, and since they got rid of him. And I think that potentially their defense could be better. They brought in Jim Schwartz, and you know, he'll employ his scheme, which can be effective, and in the past has shown to be effective. But you know, it's hard to say how that's going to look today with the Philly players. I think they have probably a pretty strong front. I'm interested to see what their defensive backs look like. I'm not sold on the offense. I don't know how effective this offense is going to be. And I think it's going to be a work in progress as the season goes, and they might have some issues on that side of the ball. These guys are kind of tough to tell. I'm not really expecting a lot out of Philadelphia this year.
With Washington, there are two things that I'm curious about. One is Kirk Cousins. He's working off the franchise tag this year. A wise move by Washington, considering he's such an unproven commodity as a quarterback. He's had one full season starting in Washington. Pretty good season, but you want to see if that's a sustained development or if he takes a step backward this year rather than throw a big money contract at him over the offseason and assume he's the guy. So I'm curious to see if he does take a hold of being the guy there at quarterback. Also, I'm interested to see how the Josh Norman acquisition works out. You know, Washington, over the years, will go out there and make a splash play. They'll go out there, they'll sign a guy who they think is really good for a lot of money, and then it doesn't work out. You know, Josh Norman was the best cornerback in the NFL in 2015, but it was also his first season of really having that kind of breakout performance. Now he's in a new location. It's a whole different situation being in the NFC East rather than the NFC South. So I'm interested to see if this ends up being a really smart move that Washington made this offseason, or if it's another you might have overpaid and overestimated, you know, what Norman can do.
Yeah, I don't know if I think Washington probably should be pretty solid this year. The thing about Cousins last year, I thought, was that he looked pretty good at times, but he also looked pretty bad at times.
Yeah.
And that's the
and
big,
that's why he's franchise
that's,
tagged and
right,
hasn't been
exactly. And that's why that's the big question I have for basically for the team is because that's I think that's going to have a lot to do with the success of this team is how consistent can he get? I mean, is he going to because if you recall,
well,
he also
good, but he, just
well,
he
yeah, if
he's going
to regardless, just establish some sort of consistency.
Yeah.
And if it's bad, they'll know to do something else. But regardless, it's this, you know, can he play more consistently? Can they get, like you said, good, consistent play out of him? Because it's going to be, you know, it's going to be tough for him to, if you recall last year, he would play well at home and then on the road, they'd have struggles, you know? So, but I think at the end of the year, that kind of cleaned up a little bit. They should be solid and in the mix. Cause it's, you know, cause I don't think any of these teams are too far apart. But I don't necessarily expect them to win the division either. I would pick Dallas if we were picking division winners.
A Romo-less Dallas.
Yep.
Well, I mean, they still have a lot going for them.
Romo could still come back.
And Romo could still come back.
I think Dak has looked good enough that line can carry it with the running game, and I think that defense is going to be a little bit better. I think Dallas should come out of this. And I'm not one that likes to say good things about Dallas.
Next up, we're moving on to the AFC West.
By the way, we totally didn't just talk about the division. We talked about all the teams.
We did. Now we're moving on to the AFC West, home of the Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. You know, we've talked at length about this over the course of the offseason about how many key changes have happened in Denver, particularly the quarterback position. Brock Osweiler now in Houston. They had the plan of initially bringing in Mark Sanchez, presumably to be the starter, have him get pushed a little bit by Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch, but that didn't work out. Mark Sanchez is who we now know him to be, I suppose. Trevor Siemian, a seventh-round pick from 2015, is now the Broncos' starting quarterback. Does that result in a step backward? I don't think so. I think they still have that strong run game and a league-leading defense, and sometimes that's really all you need. I mean, it worked last year for him. Why couldn't it work this year?
Yeah, it's funny the number of people that I hear just like, you know, this talking about Trevor Siemian as if, you know, the Broncos are – I think it was Phil Simms last – I don't want to keep quoting inside the NFL, but I think it was Phil Simms last night saying Broncos are the only ones that can do this because their defense and running game is so – can do what? Start a guy that they think is the best guy on their team? I mean, I don't even quite understand where that notion is coming from. Elway likes the guy. He's been in the system for over a year, and he wasn't on a great team in college, or certainly not a team that had a lot of success, but he made throws. And this kid could surprise a lot of people. I'm not saying he will. I'm just saying I think he could.
Right.
And
oh, it was Brandon Marshall, by the way.
Okay. And he doesn't have to. No, Brandon Marshall said some other things about him. The one I'm thinking specifically was Phil Simms saying Elway and the Broncos are the only ones that can do this, which start Trevor Siemian for some reason. Apparently, that's the only team.
That's the only team that can do it.
But I'm just saying that, like, I don't think Trevor Siemian needs to be Peyton Manning or John Elway this year with this running game and this defense. There's no need to say that they need to put that much pressure on Trevor Siemian.
No.
They need him to run Gary Kubiak's offense, which is hand the ball off and roll out and find an open guy. And there's some guys that'll get open, and assuming he can connect on those most of the time, they should be successful. And I don't think these guys shouldn't be expected to be good again this year.
San Diego is an interesting case for me because I feel like they keep every year they're more and more of an afterthought in the league. There's Phillip Rivers, you got Antonio Gates, you know, these stalwarts of the team. But nothing ever seems to come of it anymore. It's mm-hmm. it's not the way it used to be, you know, when they were truly a powerhouse, Sean Merriman, LaDainian Tomlinson, all that stuff. What I'm curious about is to see what happens with Melvin Gordon this year. He's the 15th overall pick taken last year. You know, San Diego had some high hopes for him. Ended up starting 13 games, but didn't really have that great of a season. Only 641 rushing yards, another 192 receiving yards, no touchdowns scored. And that's the big problem there. But at the same time, he's had a really good summer. He's had a really good training camp, really good preseason, has scored touchdowns, including a 44 yards, something like that, catch and run touchdown from Phil Rivers. You know, he's really shown that speed this summer. You know, that to me, that's the X factor for the Chargers, at least on offense.
Yeah, I think the Chargers are a team that could surprise some people this year with kind of a bounce back. And I'm mainly pointing to, one, that they had a lot of injuries last year on defense. They had a hard time keeping guys on the field on defense last year. Melvin Gordon, like you said, didn't have the greatest year. He did have some injury issues last year, so that could have potentially played a part in that. But my main thought here is the return of Ken Whisenhunt to the offensive coordinator position.
Yeah.
And because he and Phil Rivers worked very well together, the Chargers were really humming when he was there before he left to take over Tennessee for a while.
True.
And so him coming back, I think it's like you said, a lot of people are sleeping on the Chargers. And people don't talk about them. They're pretty much an afterthought out in that AFC West division. But I think that they could potentially surprise some people, catch up on you and surprise you.
Yeah. You know, with the Oakland Raiders, I'm really excited about them this year. You know, I think that they're, you know, maybe got a little too much love, a little too much hype last season, just in terms of, you know, like Derek Carr's first half of the season versus the second half of the season. The second half, he struggled mightily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people look at 32 touchdowns to 12 interceptions thrown and say, what a great season. But then when you see that all of, you know, so many of those touchdowns were thrown for the first 3 months of the season, and so many of those interceptions were in the final 2 months of the season, you kind of came down to earth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that this year, I think he'll do well. You know, Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, good run game, defense that continues to steadily improve every year. I think the only thing that would be holding the Raiders back this year is just the division that they're in. You know, Kansas City is such a strong team. Denver is such a strong team. There's only so many AFC playoff spots to go around. And I think that's going to be the real question with Oakland. Like, is this going to be one of those teams that goes 10-6, but because of the way that things play out in the conference and in the division, they don't make the postseason?
Well, yeah, because this is definitely one of the tougher divisions, I think, in the league. I want to say I think that Reggie McKenzie has done a great job out there. He's been there for, 3 or 4 years now. And, I mean, they've just done nothing but just add more and more talent to this team. This is definitely a solid team. They have some plenty of talent on defense and definitely some playmakers in place on offense. I'm a little suspicious of Latavius Murray and how he's going to hold up this year and what his production is going to look like. I think that's really my biggest question for Oakland is, can they start to pull it all together and take that next step and make the playoffs? And like you said, it's tough, especially in this division.
Finally, the Kansas City Chiefs. Head coach Andy Reid holding out Jamaal Charles for at least week one as he comes back from another ACL injury suffered last season. Not a big deal, though. I'm not worried about it. Maybe from a fantasy football perspective, some people are annoyed that they don't get to roll with Jamaal Charles in week one. But the Spencer Ware Charkandrick West combination resulted in the Chiefs leading the league in rushing touchdowns last year and being second in the league in rushing yards. So I think it's an interesting thing that the Chiefs have hit upon here with these backup running backs to Charles. That maybe they expected to be pretty much okay after Charles got hurt last year, but I don't think that they could have predicted the kind of success their run game had without him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good sign for the Chiefs offense. I love that Alex Smith and Jeremy Maclin connection. I think it's great. Everybody ragging on the lack of passing touchdowns in Kansas City in 2014.
Yeah,
and they kind of fixed that situation. last season. So I enjoy that. I enjoy that connection because I like Alex Smith as a quarterback. I like his kind of bland, conservative ball control way of being because he's very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps the Chiefs win games.
Mm-hmm. I think you almost said it. They're bland. That's a good word. This is a very bland, boring, good team. They're definitely
their
good.
Their defense can light it up. Yeah. I mean,
no,
their defense isn't necessarily bland.
No, I'm just saying
bland,
that, like,
but
what I mean by that is just, like, look, like, people don't want to talk about Kansas City too much. Everybody will acknowledge that they're good, but nobody wants to get behind them except for Chiefs fans. And it's because they aren't super flashy, and they just come to play every week. And but they do have a very good defense. They've got, like you said, a solid running game, Jamal Charles or not.
Yep.
I think Spencer Ware probably has the edge over Tre'Kendrick West, if what I was reading is correct. But regardless, with Kelce and Macklin, there's definitely some guys for Alex Smith to throw to, which won't have to be that often because they run a ball a ton.
Right. And finally, the NFC West. Got Chip Kelly out in San Francisco. You got Blaine Gabbert as the starting quarterback. I don't think that Gabbert starting quarterback business is going to last very long. You know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, he spent the summer very limited in what he could do in practices. He underwent a number of surgeries, three surgeries in the past year. And so that kind of put him behind the eight ball a little bit. But I think when you commit yourself to Gabbert, you commit yourself to certain on-field behaviors, especially when facing a pass rush, that are hard bad habits to break. And I think that if that stuff starts happening again, I think, you know, there's going to be maybe a reluctant, maybe not so reluctant turn back to Kaepernick.
You know what? Since we're talking about this, let me take just a couple seconds to follow up. We were talking last week about Kaepernick and the whole controversy with the anthem. And I just want to say that this decision to go to the knee, I think, is outstanding. Because my only criticism last week with what he was doing was I wasn't sure if you were kind of missing. He was having people miss the point of why he was protesting to just come after him about disrespecting the flag or whatever. And this kneeling business, it's already gotten some other guys on his team involved. There was a women's soccer player that did it in support. So I think I think we're going to see maybe even more of this.
Seahawks players are in support of it.
We're going to see some more of this coming up. People, more and more people kneeling to not disrespect the flag, but to be able to voice their support of the protest. And I think that's outstanding. Anyway, to jump back to the preview here, the Niners, I really don't know what to expect out of this team. They still have some very talented guys on their defense. And
but they've lost so many of them over the years.
They've lost a bunch over the years, but there's still some talent there. And I still can see them, you know, having decent defensive performance. That's the thing about the Tom Sula Niners from last year. They showed up and put out a good defensive performance every game that they played. They couldn't do anything on offense, but they showed up on defense every week.
That's because it was Jim Tom Sula, a longtime D-line coach there, who the players trusted, more than likely.
I get that, and that's what I'm saying, is that, like, those players are still there. Most of those players are still there that had that defense. It's a different system that they're in, or it's Kelly's, or I think it's, who's he got out there, Mangini? So, like, there's different people running the show, is my point. Are they going to be able to with roughly the same guys, be able to produce still a pretty good defense? Because I think that Chip is going to be able to take that offense a step up. I don't know how far he can take it, but I think that he'll at least be able to.
Especially if he sticks with Gabbert for a long period of time at quarterback.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think he'll move to Kaepernick unless he really feels Kaepernick can do what he's trying to do better.
Right.
And I think that maybe he can, but we'll see. They're a very interesting team, though.
Seattle Seahawks, they're remaining Super Bowl favorites going into the 2016 season. Super talented defense. Obviously, the Russell Wilson-led offense is multidimensional and dynamic. They have sort of like with the Chiefs, they have, you know, the Chiefs don't have Jamal Charles right now. The Seahawks don't have Marshawn Lynch right now. There was a period of time last season they didn't have him, and were still able to run the ball effectively. Do you think that the hype, if you will, the continued hype, the continued Super Bowl favorite hype for the Seahawks is still warranted?
I think the hype for them being one of the best teams in the NFC is very warranted. I mean, there's no signs that this defense is going to, you know, not be at least an above average to very good defense. The offense is really kind of found its way with Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin, a lot of the guys they have up there. I don't know if Jimmy Graham's going to ever work out. I mean, we'll see if he can get back healthy and what he's going to look like if he is. But I think that, you know, Marshawn Lynch is gone for sure, but they have Thomas Rawls, who looked crazy when he was healthy last year.
And they're waiting for him to come back from injury,
They're still kind of waiting for him to come back. But they also brought Kristen Michael back. And from what I was hearing, that it sounds like they're going to kind of roll with, once they're both available, kind of the two of them in a platoon almost, which I think is a pretty interesting way to go about it. You got two guys. Then if something happens to one, you still got another guy that you play a lot, you know. I don't see there's any reason for them to take much of a step back. They're still going to be one of the best teams in the NFC. I don't necessarily prescribe to them going to the Super Bowl. I wouldn't personally pick them to go to the Super Bowl, but I don't have any issue with anybody else doing that.
I guess it depends on where the playoffs run through. I mean, if the playoffs end up running through Seattle, I mean, it's hard to doubt. The Arizona Cardinals, that's the team, you know, that to me is the class of the NFC West. I think that their offense is just more explosive than Seattle's. I think that their defense is more well-rounded and a little bit more deep than Seattle's. I think that David Johnson is a tremendous running back with great pass-catching ability. That, you know, Seattle kind of has that when Thomas Rawls is healthy. We'll see how that works out with Rawls and Michael moving forward. I just really like what Arizona's got put together here. They're not significantly different, especially in a subtraction kind of way from the 2015 season. Bring on Chandler Jones, which I think is a really good addition for their pass rush there. They are the heaviest blitzing defense in the league. We'll see what kind of opportunities that affords Jones in his new home. But it's hard for me to find a lot of flaws in the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend much time extolling the virtues of the Arizona Cardinals here, just because, one, you said it very well, and two, everybody kind of knows this is a really good team.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to be better than they were last year. Just, you know, I'm not saying record-wise or whatever, anything like that, but just on a week-to-week basis, they're going to be more well-rounded, a better team overall. I still will throw the caveat out there of Carson Palmer needs to stay healthy. Obviously, we've talked about health caveats can go to everybody, but especially for the Arizona Cardinals, because we've seen what this team looks like when they put Drew Stanton under center, and it's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same team at all.
It drastically hurts their
yes,
chances.
That's a drastic downgrade. Finally, the Los Angeles Rams. They're rolling with Case Keenum as their starter. Unlike some other teams with rookies who aren't starting in week one, such as Paxton Lynch and others. I don't see that there being a situation where, barring injury, that Jared Goff would come in and start this year. He's shown some flashes.
It would be late in the season.
Yeah. Jared
Goff will start this year if it's late in the season and they have no chance of the playoffs and they just want to get him more reps.
Right. I think that would be the only thing. He's definitely not ready yet.
He's not ready to lead the team.
Not ready to lead the team yet. But, you know, Case Keenum, you know, he reminds me a lot of, like, Alex Smith, game manager, trying not to make too many mistakes, trying not to turn the ball over, and basically be a conduit for letting your defense get on the field and beat up opposing quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, granted, I would never, well, unless some crazy circumstances happen, I don't think I would have Case Keenum on my fantasy team. But as far as leading my reality team, I have no issues with Case Keenum. I think Case Keenum looks to me like a solid starting NFL quarterback. The guy really knows what he's doing. He's quick with his decisions. He knows he gets the ball out. He knows where he's going with it. The guy really knows that system. They've got some weapons there, obviously, with Gurley and Tavon Austin. The defense, defense is going to be a question as far as like how they're shifting Ogletree to the middle linebacker from weak side. And, you know, but he's looked pretty good, I think, in camp so far in the preseason and whatnot. And this is funny. The Rams are just, they always seem real solid to me, and then they end up 7-9.
7-9.
So, but you know, that's not the worst team in the league by any stretch, you know. But
You don't want to be 7-9, 8-8, 7-9, 8-8.
No,
every
I get it.
Year,
but at the same time, they've moved to a new city. Their quarterback of the future is waiting. They have their quarterback of now. They have an outstanding young running back, and a very solid defense. They should contend. They should contend on a weekly basis. Is what
yes.
I mean. They should be not laying down or rolling over to anybody. They
but
shouldn't.
Will they? Is
they
the question.
They could certainly, but no. I think that they're going to be in most games. It's just going to be, you know, what can they do? And they're not a bottom of the league team. They're not an elite, you know, top of the league team. They're one of those middle teams, and I could see them doing pretty well, or maybe not. You know, maybe underwhelming a little bit because of a lot of circumstances. Who knows?
Right. Well, that wraps up our divisional previews here this offseason at the F-Ball NFL podcast. We just got them in.
Yeah,
under
man.
The wire.
Close.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our week one 2016 season NFL Minute Picks.
Man, it feels good to say Minute Picks.
So stay tuned. We are back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and football games are about to kick off on Thursday night, tomorrow night, which only means one thing. It's time for Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
Where we go through each game, each week, break it down really briefly.
As fast as possible.
As fast as we possibly can, because there are 16 games.
Oh,
yes,
so I got to get my timer up.
Got to get your timer up. It's not the preseason anymore, Brian. Get prepared.
Not that you pay any respect to the timer, but we'll get it up anyway.
Yes. It's just a tool to try to get some brevity in here, because if we spend 5 minutes on each game and there are 16 games, well.
This podcast lasts way too long.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that. I have a fantasy draft tonight. All right, let's start with Thursday Night Football. Again, this is that Super Bowl 50 rematch. The Carolina Panthers are at the Denver Broncos. Of course, Trevor Siemian, the new starting quarterback for Denver. Cam Newton still firmly under center in Carolina. You know, these are two interesting teams, very strong defenses. We saw what Denver's defense is capable of against Cam Newton last year. I'm curious to see if the Panthers have learn their lesson. If they have, and their defense is as good as it has been, which it should be, I think that they give more problems to Trevor Siemian than the Broncos give to a now more familiar with their plans, Cam Newton. So I'm picking Carolina.
Yeah, as I hinted at the beginning of the show, I think this is one of a number of games that's really, there's a lot of reasons why it's tough to pick. I think that, you know, these two defenses clashing again. I still think Denver might have the edge there on defense. You know, running game, that's Carolina's bread and butter. You know,
there's a good running game in Denver, too. But
Yeah.
But that's the focus of that offense.
Cam will have that chip on his shoulder from the Super Bowl for sure. Von Miller is still in this game. I'm gonna call it. I'm going to say that Trevor Siemian actually looks pretty good, and Denver wins.
All right. Now moving to the early slate of games on Sunday. Green Bay Packers are at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Aaron Rodgers gets Jordy Nelson back, which should really help out that Packers offense that's always good anyway. Jacksonville had a really strong offense last year. I expect another step forward out of Blake Bortles, thanks to Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns being out there. They made a lot of key additions on defense, but the thing is, I think it might take a while for those guys to settle in and really find their true form. You know, I think it does help that it's going to be a hot 90-degree day down in Jacksonville for those Packers to come in and play this game. But I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay.
Yeah, this is a really tough test for Bortles right out of the gate, because the secondary for the Packers is really good.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be quite a test. But Allen Robinson looked like such a beast last year, and I don't see any of that slowing down. I think the the Jags should be a fun team to watch this year. This one is kind of tough to tell because it's in Jacksonville, and I really don't know how much better this Jacksonville defense is going to be. I'll pick the Packers, but I don't know why. I mean, I'll pick the Packers.
I'm picking the Packers until I get.
I definitely could see Jacksonville winning this game.
I want to get a good look at the Jacksonville defense. I want to see what they're capable of doing.
You don't buy it quite yet out of the gate against the Packers. I got you.
Buffalo Bills are at the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore getting a lot of those injured players back. Quarterback Joe Flacco, running back Justin Forsett, wide receiver Steve Smith, linebacker Terrell Suggs among them. So that should help this team that went a disappointing 5-11 last year. Tyrod Taylor, former Baltimore backup quarterback, coming to town, serve as the starter for Buffalo. I don't know about this, Rex and Rob Ryan on the defense in Buffalo. I think Baltimore, they're the home team. They're, excited to get all these healthy starters back on the field and get back into being contenders in the AFC North and in the AFC in general. So I'm going Ravens.
Yeah, this one is another one. I think the Buffalo is going to be really solid this year. I think they're going to be, they have a lot going for them. I'm less concerned about Rob joining Rex. But it's in M&T. The Ravens are getting a lot of guys back. There's definitely a lot of questions for Baltimore. But again, I'm sticking with they were the best 5-11 team ever last season, and that they were not nearly as bad as that record made them seem, and they could easily step back into being a pretty good team. Especially if
just gotta stay healthy. I mean,
the home game.
I mean,
right
already
the
they've had so many issues with tight ends. I mean, with Ben Watson already being out for the year, Dennis Pitta, Max Williams being banged up. So.
I'm gonna go back to that old wisdom that you couldn't really count on last year, which is Ravens at home, because that for years that was like not anything to mess with, and I think last year was more of an aberration than a change.
Next up, Chicago Bears are at the Houston Texans. I'm going to go with the Houston Texans here, even though I don't completely have a lot of trust in Brock Osweiler just yet. We saw him 7 starts last year. I know this is a tired argument, but let me just make it. But I am going to go with the Texans because he also does have the help of guys like DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller. You have the quality defense. J.J. Watt says he's 100% ready to go and healthy. And when you talk about that Chicago offensive line, Chicago offense in general, those starters during the preseason couldn't move the ball at all, which I think is a major concern. And then they're going to Houston dealing with this defense and a team that all around has a lot of good weaponry, Lamar Miller at running back. So I'm going to go with the home team going with the Texans.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, this is just an extremely tough test for Chicago right out of the gate to go to play this Houston team who, I mean, I don't think it matches up well for Chicago and for reasons that I don't even feel like listing right now because we're running out of time. I'm just going to go ahead and say the Texans.
Cleveland Browns are at the Philadelphia Eagles. Carson Wentz, of course, starting at quarterback for the Eagles, drafted at number 2 overall because the Eagles traded up with the Browns in April to grab their quarterback of the future and now present. I like Cleveland's offense a lot more than Philadelphia's. RG3 and Terrell Pryor and Corey Coleman and Duke Johnson. But I like Philadelphia's defense a lot more than I like Cleveland's, especially when you have so many new faces on defense in Cleveland. 2 rookies are going to be starting at outside linebacker. So it's just a matter of who can kind of get over a little bit more. And I think I'm going with the Browns. I'm going to go with the Browns. I like their offense.
Why are you doing this? You're stealing my thunder here. I thought because everybody's telling me that the Browns are going to be like the worst team in the league this year. And I get it. They've had so many changes. There's so many new faces there, but I'm not sold on this Philly defense. Even with new Jim Schwartz and some of the new guys they've added, if they lock down the Browns and whatever, then I'll definitely admit it. I'll admit that I made a mistake or whatever. but I mean, you got regardless of the Browns' issues on defense, I'm not sold on that Philly offense. The Philly defense is probably where their strength is, but I think these Browns offense they could sneak up on them, and it's in Philly. If this were in Cleveland, I would definitely, I would say Browns all day. But it's in Philly. I think it's going to be a close game. But you stole it from me, but I'll take the Browns.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta trying to avenge a disappointing 2015 season, which they were swept by the Buccaneers. But I don't think that they're going to do it. I like you were saying about not trusting the offense or the defense in Philadelphia, I'm feeling the same way right now about the Atlanta Falcons. There's some things, of course, to like Devontae Freeman, when the Matt Ryan Julio Jones connection is working, things like that. But I'm not convinced. I'm also not convinced that they're going to put together a pass rush. They struggled last year, only 19 sacks, the fewest in the league, and it doesn't look like they've turned that ship around, at least from what we've seen in the preseason, which, again, caveat, who knows what it, if it means anything. Tampa Bay, meanwhile, I think they take that another step forward with Jameis Winston in his second season. I like a lot of things going on in that offense and on the offensive line, so I'm going to go with the Buccaneers with the road win.
So it's in Atlanta. That was the one thing I wasn't sure about.
Your time's up.
Well, you took the whole minute. Well, my time's up. I'll just say it's the Falcons.
You're picking the Falcons?
I don't know. I don't know what to think of either of these teams yet.
We don't know what to think of any of these teams yet.
There's some that there's teams that you kind of have an eye. Like Seattle, you kind of expect them to be pretty good. You know what I mean? There's just a bunch of question marks on a bunch of teams, and these are two that I have a lot of question marks about. So I'll take the home team, I guess.
Minnesota Vikings are at the Tennessee Titans. It's either going to be Sean Hill or Sam Bradford, a quarterback from Minnesota. Tennessee, of course, it's Marcus Mariota, who had a really nice summer, and we'll see how that translates into the regular season. They also have that exotic smash-mouth running game with Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray. The only thing that bothers me about Tennessee in this game, because I think that they'll do well on offense here. I think they'll do well passing the ball. I think they'll do well running the ball. But I don't think that... I think there's going to be issues that they're going to have, though. I think Minnesota's defense is going to make things a little bit rough, especially in the secondary for Mariota in this game. And I think that Tennessee's defense doesn't have enough to handle just the steady dose of Adrian Peterson in this game. Further, Minnesota's coming into this game, you know, a little upset. No Teddy Bridgewater. So I'm going to go with the visitors. I'm going with the Vikes.
I thought you were going to pick the Titans again on this. And you took the whole minute again. No, I've been thinking about this game all day. This is another one I think that there's a lot of reasons why I could see it going different ways. There's been a lot of hype about Tennessee and the new things they're doing. A lot of people expect a lot out of them. But I need to see it first because I still have a lot of questions about this defense, and not to mention the O-line. And you're going to get up against this Minnesota defense, which I expect to be one of the top few in the league. So I like that defense on the road. So I'm going with Vikings.
Talking about top defenses, moving on to the next early afternoon game on Sunday, the Cincinnati Bengals are at the New York Jets. Two teams that definitely have defense as a calling card with some very surprisingly effective passing and rushing offense to garnish the plate, if you will. Ryan Fitzpatrick, quarterback for the Jets, Andy Dalton for the Bengals. I think this is going to be a very competitive game. I think it's really going to come down to pass rush and which quarterback can get more rattled more regularly. And because I've seen this happen so many times with Andy Dalton, particularly on the road against good defenses, I have to lean New York Jets here.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking the Jets here. I like them to. I think this should be a good game. It'd be intriguing for a lot of reasons. But I like the Jets in this situation. They're basically picking up where they left off, or trying to put it back together where they were at the end of last year, where Andy Dalton and the Bengals are getting into whole new territory with different receivers. Hugh has been in his ear for the last couple of years, and he's in Cleveland now. And I know it was his. Somebody under who? The quarterback's coach that moved up to take over OC, so there is some continuity there, but it's still a different guy in your ear. So because of lots different for Cincy, and the Jets are at home, I like the Jets.
Oakland Raiders are at the New Orleans Saints. It's a pretty decent test of this New Orleans defense, with Oakland having such a impressive offense, particularly at times, particularly the first half of last season. New Orleans, it's Drew Brees, you know, it's the 5,000-yard man, and it's whether or not this 5,000-yard man can get over on a increasingly tough-to-play Oakland defense. I am going to go with the New Orleans Saints here. I like the Drew Brees factor. I like the Mark Ingram factor. I also very much like the idea of the Oakland Raiders having to travel to New Orleans for a noon Eastern time game. I think that makes things difficult for Oakland, and for that reason, I'm going Saints.
All right. This is another one I think it's tough for a lot of reasons, mainly because as abysmal as the Saints' defense was last year, you know, it's like I mentioned just a little bit ago, their offense was really good. They don't need to be that much better, but they still need to make a step. And this is a good, like you said, it's a very good test for them right out of the gate. But it is an early game. It is in New Orleans, and I don't know. I can't pick too many road teams, so I'm going to go with New Orleans here.
San Diego Chargers. Rounding out the early game slate, yes, there are only three late afternoon games on Sunday. It is that time of year. San Diego Chargers in a divisional game, traveling to Arrowhead to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, San Diego, we were talking about it earlier, just one of those difficult teams for me to peg down. All I can say is Phillip Rivers is a very solid quarterback. Sometimes good things happen there on defense. There's going to be no Joey Bosa. And I think Melvin Gordon's going to have a really nice bounce back year after somewhat disappointing rookie outing. But KC is just so well-rounded, run game, passing game, defense, and they have that home field advantage that is pretty significant in the NFL, particularly when you're talking about division rival like the Chargers. So I'm going Chiefs.
Well, especially at Arrowhead, too. That's
especially at
Arrowhead. Historically been a tough place to go and win. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that I think this is a tight division. I think there should be a lot of competitiveness in this division. But I definitely think the Chiefs are where they want to be right now. And I think the Chargers are trying to get where they want to be.
Yeah.
And that coupled with the fact that they're in Kansas City would have me lean towards the Chiefs over the Chargers here. And hey, man, look.
There's the minute.
We got that one in early.
We got that one in early. See, that makes up for some of our going right, overtime yeah. later, right? Earlier in the segment. Okay, we got three late afternoon games on Sunday, starting up with the Miami Dolphins, who travel to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. A lot of people, we keep hearing this, though. This is the third or fourth year in a row. Yeah, the Dolphins, they're gonna make that push. They're going to make that push this year, finally. This is the year Tannehill really gets it. And with Adam Gase there with Ryan Tannehill, maybe that's the case. But to open the season on the road at Seattle, a favorite to reach the Super Bowl this year, a longtime favorite to reach the Super Bowl, very good team at home in a very loud stadium. First week, first game, I think it's going to be way too much for the Dolphins to handle, so I'm going with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be hyperbolic or anything, but this one seems like Seattle all day. I mean, Seattle, again, Seattle's one of the best teams in the NFC. The Dolphins are still trying to find themselves. They've had a lot of talent, but they've obviously had to switch coaches this offseason, and we don't know what to expect out of Gase. Certainly not in the very first game he's coaching. So it's just a really tough task for them right off the bat. So I'm going with Seattle.
Next up, the Detroit Lions are at the Indianapolis Colts.
Guy, why is that late game?
Who knows?
So we can all see it.
Andrew Luck coming back from a number of significant injuries in 2015 that cost him 9 games. He's still got soreness in that throwing shoulder. Mm-hmm. That was what was reported today, which makes me a bit nervous considering that, yeah, they spent half of their 2016 draft picks on offensive linemen and 9 draft picks over the last 4 years, but they haven't been able to protect Andrew Luck. They haven't really given him a lot of weapons to work with. They haven't given him a defense that can help bail out the pressure on his shoulders. So I like Detroit actually going in here and winning this game. I think Andrew Luck is going to be a little bit tentative against a line that he probably doesn't completely trust and shouldn't. And I also think that this fast-paced Detroit Lions offense without Megatron is going to be a little too difficult for Indianapolis' defense to handle right off the bat. So I'm going to go with the road win for the Lions.
I think that the Lions are the more talented team here. You're telling me that I'm going to pick the Lions on the road to start the season?
You would never, would you?
I could totally see this being a 38-37 game that the Colts pull out at the very end.
That's the thing. Andrew Luck is a good fourth quarter comeback kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Game winning drive kind of dude.
So I'm going with Colts just because I know my Lions.
And, of course, no week one of an NFL season would be complete without some sort of inter-NFC East matchup, and that's just what we get late Sunday afternoon. The New York Giants are at the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott, of course, the quarterback in place of the injured Tony Romo. I'm still going to go with the Dallas Cowboys here. I'm going with Dallas because they're at home. I'm going with Dallas because I like Dak Prescott. I like their offensive line way more than I like the New York Giants. I like their defense a bit more than I like the Giants. And so I'm not saying maybe, you know, New York gets it together. You see it all the time with them. Sometimes they are terrible in the first half of the season, better in the second half. Or those alternate wins and losses. They're kind of 8-8 like that. But I don't think so in this game. I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
No, again, I we were just talking about the NFC East. I like the Cowboys for a lot of reasons to take this division this year. I think this home game against the Giants should be a good way for them to start. The Giants still, I think, have a lot of things they're trying to get together, and I think the Cowboys are just functioning better right now as a unit, or defensive and offensive units combined. And I think this is the Cowboys. We'll throw in the caveat, though, it's the NFC East, so you never know.
So you never know. And we got Sunday night football action. The New England Patriots are at the Arizona Cardinals. No Tom Brady, as we have discussed. It's Jimmy Garoppolo. This is going to be an interesting game because I think, you know, everybody's kind of focusing on the Garoppolo factor. While kind of forgetting that there are a lot of weapons for him to work with on offense, but also a very strong defense that I think has gone under the radar because everybody's really been focusing on this quarterback stuff. And I think that defense is going to make things a bit difficult for Carson Palmer. But Carson Palmer is the kind of quarterback that can take a lot of hits and get up and just keep throwing with accuracy. He's not afraid of anything. And I think that really is going to work in his favor here. I think Arizona being at home, I think that really works in their favor. I think this game, a couple months ago, if you had asked me about this game, I probably would have just knee-jerk reacted and say Arizona in a blowout. But I think this is going to be closer than you think, but I still want to go Cardinals.
Oh, that's the thing, is I think this one's really tough to call, and it's mainly has to do with I expect Garoppolo to come in and not look like Brady, but look functional enough to run the offense.
Yeah, and he's had enough time with the first-team offense this summer, so that really helps.
And like you were alluding to, they're basically just a machine at this point with the amount of guys they have on this team. So they're going to be you can say Garoppolo is running the show, but they're going to be
Belichick's running the show.
They're going to be a tough out for the first 4 weeks until Brady comes back, and then they're just going to be really impossible to beat potentially. And
I see it happening.
But you know,
I see them being pretty impossible to beat.
All that being said, I think I'm excited for this game. I think this should be a fun game to watch. I think these are two extremely good teams. I'll take the home team at home in the night game. I love BA. The Cardinals, if Patriots are on the road against many, there's not many other teams they could be on the road against that I wouldn't still want to pick the Patriots, I think.
Yeah.
But against the Cardinals in this situation, I'm going to go with the Cardinals, though I won't be surprised. This should at least be a very entertaining game.
And finally, the Monday Night Football doubleheader kicks off with the Pittsburgh Steelers at Washington. The big marquee matchup to watch here, Antonio Brown versus Josh Norman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Antonio Brown wins that battle. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers win this game. I think they have a lot good going for them up front on the defense. I'm curious to see, you know, what the situation in the secondary looks like. I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a kind of work in progress situation like we did last year. But I think it's going to work out a little bit better than it did a year ago. And besides, they weren't stingy with yards, but they were stingy with points. But that offense is not stingy with points. They were averaging 30 points per game last year with Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback. I expect the same this year going with the Steelers.
I'm a little hesitant to take the Steelers here, not because of all the reasons on paper, because I think on paper they should definitely beat Washington. I think
sure.
There's a better. They're such a complete offense, even without Le'Veon Bell. They're gonna be just.
They did fine last year with D'Angelo.
They're gonna be a ridiculous offense regardless, and their defense I think is probably a little improved from last year, where I don't necessarily they weren't, you know, Steelers historical dominant, but they were solid, and I think they should be a little bit better than that maybe. The only thing that would give me hesitancy on this is just that I've seen the Steelers play weird when they play teams that aren't very inspiring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not that Washington isn't a good team that they can't get up for. It's more of just like, it's just Washington. They're on the road. You know, I can see them kind of letting down. I'll still pick the Steelers here because I think this offense right out of the gate should be too good for Washington to handle. But I wouldn't see. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Steelers kind of let this one slip through their fingers either.
And finally, the late game on Monday night, the L.A. Rams are at the SF Niners. You know, as you were saying earlier, there's still a lot of good pieces on that San Francisco 49ers defense. And you know, love him or hate him or hate the way that he coaches, Eric Mangini can get some good work out of the defenses that he's coached in the past. But I am concerned about that San Francisco offense being run by Blaine Gabbert. You know, I'm curious about, you know, if he's going to be able to make anything really happen with Torrey Smith and all the guys that are out there. And I like the Rams more here. So I'm going with the Rams, but then at the same time, you know, because this is a team that seems like it has a lot going for it, but then ends up being 8-8 and 7-9 all the time. I wouldn't be surprised though, if this was a close, potentially lower scoring game that San Francisco pulls out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Yeah, it just seems like I keep wanting to pick road teams this week.
I know, and you loathe to pick road teams.
I do, because history shows, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That,
I know.
Like, it's tough to win on the road, you know. It's not the easiest thing to do. But, yeah, no, I just think that – I think L.A. is just a little bit more put together at this point. I think that San Francisco is still trying to find themselves and figure out, how they're going to work – how it's all going to work together. And, you know, Chip putting his mark on the offense, them getting used to his system, you know, Mangini taking over this defense and working with those tools. I don't know. I could see this going either way. I'll take the Rams just because I like them a little bit. I think they're a little bit further along, but who knows?
Well, that concludes our Week 1 2016 NFL season minute picks.
Although we should probably call them minute-ish picks.
Minute-ish picks. We try to stay within the parameters of the one-minute mark just to make it easier on everybody involved. So, yeah, as we say every time, do with them what you want. Write them down on a piece of paper. Burn them. I don't care.
We prefer you burn them.
For entertainment purposes only. We're going to take...
Outdoors.
Yes, outdoors. We're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm going to send you on home for this week, so stay tuned. Well, that does it for this week's edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Football is officially back.
Yep. By the time you hear this.
Potentially.
Well, by the time you hear this, you're within 24 hours.
You're definitely within 24 hours of Broncos Panthers. It's been a long, desolate off season, but we finally made it.
Yeah, we're less than 24 hours from the simianing.
The simianing of the league. Yeah. That concludes this week's episode.
Yeah,
that'll do it. I'm Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL at thecomeback.com and sportsonearth.com, and I also cover the Cleveland Browns at scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. You can find me on Twitter at @fball_Andrea. I also joined Will Leach this week on the Will Leach Experience podcast via Sports on Earth to help out with the NFL previewing. Joined him to talk about all 16 AFC teams. Fellow colleague at Sports on Earth, Jason Hirschhorn, joined him to talk NFC, so make sure you tune into those.
Yeah, you check it out. It's good stuff.
It's good stuff. And you're Brian.
And I'm Brian. I talk about the NFL with friends and business associates as well as on this podcast. And I'm also the producer of this podcast, technical producer of this podcast.
Executive senior technical producer.
Junior technical producer. I haven't earned my senior yet. I got to work on a couple things. And I can be found on also be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's @BFAT65.
Well, as always, guys, thanks for tuning in. to this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Enjoy all of the games this weekend. Watch as many as you can. And we'll be back next week to preview week two, recap week one, and talk about all the news and notable happenings around the NFL. So,
or whatever else we want to talk about.
Or whatever else we want to talk about. So, no, it's going to be the NFL. So, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Later.
Peace.